It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
From Washington, this is VOA News. Liberian healthcare workers to strike amid Ebola epidemic. Spanish nurse improves from Ebola while a U.S. healthcare worker is infected. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Thousands of Liberian healthcare workers are to begin an indefinite strike today if their demands for better wages and working conditions are not met. Talks with the government broke down Friday. Liberia has the highest number of infections and fatalities. More than 230 healthcare workers have died of Ebola, including 93 in Liberia. In Madrid, Spanish health authorities said Sunday there are signs of hope for a nurse infected with the disease. Teresa Romero remains in serious condition, believed to be the first person outside Africa to contract the illness after caring for two infected priests repatriated from West Africa for treatment. A healthcare worker in the state of Texas has contracted the illness after treating a Liberian who died last week. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Tom Frieden says it appears to be the result of what he calls a breach in the protocol of caring for Thomas Eric Duncan.
Unfortunately, it is possible in the coming days that we will see additional cases of Ebola. This is because the healthcare workers who cared for this individual may have had a breach of the same nature of the individual who appears now to have a preliminary positive test.
What breach of protocol occurred has not been revealed. The infected worker was not among 48 people who had been monitored and had contact with Duncan. A patient who recently visited Liberia, meanwhile, and displayed symptoms of Ebola has been admitted to a Massachusetts hospital, although the person has not been confirmed to have had the disease. Several U.S. airports have begun a stepped-up program to screen passengers arriving from West Africa. Britain also is introducing Ebola screening at certain airports and train stations. The French press agency quoting experts say another Ebola victim are the economies of some of the world's poorest countries. Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf acknowledged last week to the World Bank her country's development agenda has been interrupted by the virus. Sierra Leone's finance minister said Saturday Ebola has had the same effect as an economic embargo by isolating affected countries. At least 10 people were killed, 15 wounded Sunday by a car bomb in the Somali capital Mogadishu. The blast occurred outside a popular hotel and cafe. Authorities are blaming the blast on the terror group Al-Shabaab. Earlier, unknown gunmen shot and wounded a Somali journalist working for an independent television station in Mogadishu. The French press agency reports at least 18 people killed, 20 others missing after an overcrowded boat sank off the southern coast of Guinea on Friday. The vessel is believed to have carried more than 60 people and collided with a mining vessel. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. This has been the latest news from The Voice of America.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian health workers go on strike today to demand Ebola hazard pay.
The position remains unbending. There are also actions starting business from today to reassure the Liberian people. That's why we took oath, but we also need to be respected and protected in our various career as we go forward.
Alfonso Zwia is a hygienist with the Island Clinic Ebola Treatment Unit. A U.S. healthcare worker who treated Liberian Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan in Texas has contracted the virus. We have spent a day with Sierra Leone's first body burial teams, and the U.S. seizes the property of Equatorial Guinea's vice president in a corruption case.
I think that there is disappointment that the case will not meet its potential of really exposing in great detail how money is laundered and how the money is stolen from the public funds of the country.
Ken Horwitz is a senior legal officer for anti-corruption at the Open Society Justice Initiative. Conservationists sound the alarm over elephant poaching in Mozambique. And Kung Fu is becoming a popular way to get in shape in Uganda. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Healthcare workers in Liberia will begin a nationwide strike today, Monday, to press home their demands for a pay increase and other benefits. Liberia has the largest number of Ebola infections, including about 2,300 deaths. And some say the strike could deliver a serious blow to the fight against the deadly virus. According to the World Health Organization, about 95 Liberian healthcare workers have died so far from the Ebola out of 201 infected. Alfonso Weah is a hygienist with the Island Clinic Ebola Treatment Unit, the largest government-run Ebola center in the capital, Monrovia. He tells me the workers are demanding $700 a month in hazard pay on top of their monthly salaries of around $200 to $300.
Health workers have so many issues. The first concern and issue they raise is about the reinstatement of the president and the secretary general that was suspended by this government. The next issue was about the payment in salary, because you know this epidemic is not just a normal hospital basing. It's an epidemic where when you go into it, you expect to die or to survive. And as we speak to you, currently, most of our colleagues, the health workers, are dying. Some already infected already, they are lying down in the various ETUs. So our demand was the salary structure a government offer was very low. And we believe there should be an increasement into the salary structure that we all demanded for. Like for example, the hygienists, were told were making 1,000, were told were making 750, were told were making 500. Today, they finally told us that we're making $300. And we believe that making $300 in this type of crisis, this type of work we do, we have no insurance benefit, we have no risk benefit, and they're even cutting taxes for the money.
Have you, the health workers, brought your grievances to the Ministry of Health?
If brought to set up witness, we met the Internal Affairs, we discussed with the Internal Affairs Ministry through the Minister, Maurice Duplé. We then had a meeting, a joint meeting, with other key stakeholders, including the health ministry. They failed to turn up. Today, as I speak to you, we are set to start our gospel actions and take government a help to our demands and our plans. Today, as I speak to you, no health workers will enter in any facility to go and work.
Someone has said that it's not right to go on strike in the face of this Ebola crisis.
Well, the president took oath to uphold, defend, and protect the states. And the health workers took oath to save lives. Now, the things we are saying is about this sickness is not a normal thing. It's not a normal sickness. Most of our colleagues are dying. We just need our insurance, our hazard payment, our benefit, at least those health workers that will survive will be able to show up that I was part of the process of the epidemic.
When you talk about hazard benefits, how much is that? I see some figures talk about $700. Is it 700 Liberian dollars or 700 U.S. dollars?
Thank you for that question. We projected a doctor, according to government, first pronouncement, doctor will make $1,500. United States will make $750 plus the government salary. Then her genius would be $750. So that was the arrangement. Later on, it came down to lowest $250. So we are saying the $250 is very small, and those that go in the ETUs for making $300 are also small. We are telling government at least to get an increasement, and now government is also taking taxes for the money. That is our concern.
Alphonsus Weah is a hygienist with the Island Clinic Ebola Treatment Unit, the largest government-run Ebola center in the capital, Monrovia. VOA reached Health Minister Dr. Walter Gwenegale for comment, but he referred us to the Minister of Information, whom he described as a government spokesman. Minister of Information Louise Brown has not been responding to our calls for the past week. President Barack Obama has called for immediate steps to ensure the U.S. medical system is ready to follow the proper protocol for treating Ebola patients. He spoke Sunday following news that a Texas healthcare worker has contracted Ebola, the first transmission in the United States. Mr. Obama ordered the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to quickly investigate how a nurse at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital contracted the virus. The nurse was part of the team that treated the first Ebola patient to be diagnosed in the United States, Thomas Eric Duncan of Liberia, who died last week. Dr. Thomas Frieden is director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
We're deeply concerned about this new development with a preliminary positive in a healthcare worker who cared for the index patient in Dallas on multiple occasions after his diagnosis. I think the fact that we don't know of a breach in protocol is concerning because clearly there was a breach in protocol. We have the ability to prevent the spread of Ebola by caring safely for patients. The fact is that the individual who became ill was, as per protocol, self-monitoring. Immediately when they developed symptoms, they isolated themselves. They were promptly isolated at the hospital so that any further spread from that individual was stopped. And fundamentally at this point, there are four things that we're doing. First is to make sure that that individual is cared for safely and effectively. Second, we're identifying that individual's contacts, and our CDC team lead for this investigation on the ground in Dallas interviewed that individual in detail. Third, we now consider all of the healthcare workers who cared for the index patient potentially to have been exposed, and we'll be rostering those individuals and determining which require active follow-up in addition to their self-monitoring. And fourth, we'll conduct a full investigation of what happens before health workers go in, what happens when they're there, and what happens in taking off their protective equipment, because infections only occur when there's a breach in protocol.
Dr. Thomas Frieden is director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He spoke Sunday on the CBS television program. In West Africa, traditions are suffering in the time of Ebola. Important burial rites are no longer possible. Since June, Sierra Leone's government has decreed all deaths be treated as suspect and should only be handled by trained Ebola teams. Adam Bells reports for VOA News from Calahom, where Sierra Leone's first body management team was established and is still hard at work.
When we arrive in Kailan District, Sierra Leone was entering their third day of government-ordered lockdown. The country was told to stay at home so Ebola cases could be identified and information disseminated. Kailan's Red Cross burial team, driving through thick jungle on dirt roads, travels up to 12 hours every day to reach remote communities. Doctors Without Borders representative Alex Vandenick says the fight against Ebola will be won or lost in these communities.
Ebola kills people at home. Ebola centers is absolutely essential, but it's not going to work to tackle the epidemic if you don't tackle the community work. And quarantines and lockdowns are not the answer to be able to take in charge all those people who are dying in the communities.
In the village of Mamboma, the burial team has just arrived. An old woman has died in her home. This unit was the first Ebola burial team to be trained in Sierra Leone. Its expertise is essential Ebola contaminated bodies are at their most infectious soon after death, but the village elders are not happy to have them bury this woman. Burial team leader Safa Kamen says they cannot force the situation.
If they don't agree for us to do it, we don't force them, we just go and give our report to our bosses.
The Ebola outbreak is suppressing many social traditions. The dead woman is the village's oldest and most important spiritual leader. Village elder Philip B. Brimer says she is required to have a traditional burial.
It was not for this Ebola case. She was to be buried in the town. And even the paramount chief was to know about it. But because of this Ebola, she is going to be buried where others can be buried.
The village elders eventually and reluctantly let the burial team go ahead. Villagers watch from a distance, scared to get too close. Philip shows the team towards the house. They disinfect anything that could be contaminated. The elder says he finds this very strange.
The gas they are putting her inside is what's strange to us. And the way they are dressed and the way they are doing it, every second they spray, every 2 seconds they spray, we cannot do that.
Philip follows the burial team, leading many residents of this village of 800 people. No women will come to this burial. All of them are afraid. Adam Bales for VOA News, Kailan, Sierra Leone.
Today is Monday, October 13th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Equatorial Guinea's second vice president, Teodori Nguema Obiang, has been ordered by the U.S. Justice Department to sell more than $30 million worth of property that it believes was bought using illegally obtained assets from corrupt business deals. Jennifer Lazuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
The United States Department of Justice says the son of Equatorial Guinea's president must forfeit his U.S.-based property and belongings, including a mansion in Malibu, California, Michael Jackson memorabilia, and luxury cars, which are believed to have been purchased using money from illegal dealings in his home country. The civil forfeiture case, alleging nearly $80 million from proceeds of corruption, was originally brought against Teodori Nguema Obiang in 2011. Ken Hurwitz is a senior legal officer for anti-corruption at the Open Society Justice Initiative.
It's an extraordinary case in that this is the first case where a living person whose assets were being seized. So this is historic in that sense. It's the first case in the United States where the attempt is to seize assets that are owned by the current rulers, people who still retain power in their countries.
Hurwitz said previous cases have all happened years after the person has died or left power, often making it difficult to track down and define the assets allegedly stolen by those individuals. The Obiang family has ruled Equatorial Guinea for more than 30 years. Despite vast and profitable oil and gas reserves, the World Bank says more than three-quarters of the population lives below the poverty line. Hurwitz said this case also shows how difficult it is to show how this level of corruption occurs.
I think that there is a disappointment that the case will not meet its potential of really exposing in great detail how the corruption works and how money is laundered and how the money is stolen from the public funds of the country, how extortion and self-dealing take place in the country, and perhaps most importantly, how the money is laundered, that is to say, the role of lawyers and middlemen and bankers and brokers in assisting to grease the wheels of the abuse.
Obiang, who is notorious for his lavish lifestyle and playboy ways, says all the items were purchased using money from legal business deals. The Open Society Justice Initiative says that the money from the sale of Obiang's U.S.-based belongings will be given to charitable organizations to benefit the people of Equatorial Guinea. Under a settlement with the Justice Department, Obiang will get to keep his remaining overseas assets, including Michael Jackson's famous white crystal glove and a $38.5 million Gulfstream jet, although they could be seized if brought to the United States. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
The elephant population of Mozambique is under siege, according to conservationists, after dozens of killings in recent weeks. The government has put together a task force to address poaching in the country's northern elephant reserve, where officials estimate two elephants are being killed each day. Anita Powell reports from VOA's Southern Africa Bureau in Johannesburg.
Elephants are being killed at alarming rates in northern Mozambique, conservationists say, warning that anti-poaching measures must be stepped up. Most of the carnage is taking place inside the Nyasa National Reserve, a conservation area approximately the size of the nation of Denmark and twice the size of South Africa's famous Kruger National Park. The reserve is home to approximately 12,000 elephants. Last month, a gang of poachers suspected of killing 39 elephants this year was arrested, and the World Conservation Society counted 22 slaughtered elephants in the first 2 weeks of September alone. The United Nations estimates poaching and ivory trafficking are at a 25-year high, with 170 tons of ivory traded in the past 5 years. Ivory demand has skyrocketed in Asia, along with the price. World Wildlife Fund African Elephant Coordinator Lamine Sanogo spoke to VOA News from Nairobi.
This is a real concern, and the rate is increasing every day. And we think that if there is no solution, immediate solution, elephant population is going to collapse seriously when you look at the poaching rate currently.
He says he is especially concerned that the poachers, many of whom he says are part of international crime syndicates and have sophisticated tools, outnumber and outclass the relatively small number of park rangers protecting Nyasa's elephants.
This region of northern Mozambique is very critical for the conservation of the African elephant. And we really need much more partners, including government and the international community, to join the effort to address the issue before it becomes late.
Mozambique is still recovering from a long civil war that ended 2 decades ago. Last year, the top rebel group turned opposition party threatened to again turn rebellious.
That was Anita Powell reporting from our Johannesburg bureau. In Kampala's suburbs and slums, Kung Fu is becoming a popular way to get in shape, learn discipline, and break into the country's booming action film industry known as Wakaliwood. For kids learning the martial art, becoming a famous action star has become the ultimate goal. Elizabeth Pollard has more from Uganda's capital.
In a suburb outside Kampala, Jesus Ajemba is hard at work. He is teaching a group of 10-year-olds how to punch. A longtime adherent to Kung Fu, he holds classes weekly, attends 3 Kung Fu workouts a week, and still finds time to star and produce in Uganda's action film industry. Sajemba has been doing this for years, and he's playing every role from prosecutors to villains. The films, which commonly feature motorcycle chases and intricately choreographed martial arts scenes, also tackle some of Uganda's larger issues. One movie, called The Crazy World, covers child sacrifice, and many of his young kung fu students star in the film. Sajemba explains how he got started in the business.
When I was, it was 17 years, we joined this one, which is called the Country Wing Chinese Kung Fu, and the master was Bruce Bai, known as Rasta Loon. So he trained us very well, and as per now, I can do everything, and I can teach Kung Fu.
And how did you get into the movies?
Yeah,
together?
In fact, one day I first saw the Jet Li's movie, which is known as The Leader. Mm-hmm. Then I was interested. Then I said, no, I know Kung Fu. Why don't I go and join the film industry? Then I went to Ramon Film Production, and I met those guys. We joined together, and we started acting.
His colleague, Ernest Sarunya, who has worked in Wakaliwood since it started, has become a local celebrity in Ugandan cinema. A gregarious man, his films take on a life of their own, using homemade props such as wooden guns and binoculars made of old water bottles. His passion is to improve lives through film, and he hopes one day to open an acting academy in Kampala.
We need to get schools to teach actors, whereby this guy who directs the movie, he finds the work easier.
The buoyant mix of homegrown kung fu stars and uniquely Ugandan cinema has made these films immensely popular. People often stop the actors on the street and thank them for their films. Sajemba and Sarunya are hoping that in the future, an official Ugandan film council and government investment in their industry will become part of the production. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenyan defending champion Rita Jeptoo clocked 2 hours, 24 minutes and 35 seconds to retain her Bank of America Chicago Marathon crown in the United States of America on Sunday. Ethiopian Mary Dibaba was second ahead of Kenyan Florence Kiplagat. In the men's race, Eliud Kipchoge clocked 2 hours, 4 minutes and 11 seconds to lead Sammy Kitwara and Dickson Chumba in a 1-2-3 Kenyan medal podium sweep. Ethiopian Kenenisa Bekele was fourth. Turning to football, Algeria pipped Ghana 1-0 as Cameroon edged South Africa 1-0 in Group B action at the Telecom and Namibia Mobile Africa Women's Championship in Windhoek, Namibia on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Namibia beat Zambia 2-0 and Nigeria dismissed Ivory Coast 4-2. Today, Monday, action resumes in Group A when Zambia challenge Nigeria and Namibia encounter Ivory Coast. In men's football, hosts Sudan pipped African champions Nigeria 1-0 as South Africa beat Republic of Congo 2-0 in Group A action in the Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers on Saturday. South Africa lead the group with 7 points. The Congolese follow ahead of Sudan, then Nigeria. Algeria beat Malawi 2-0 as Mali dismissed Ethiopia 2-0 in Group B. Algeria lead the group with 9 points. Mali is second, followed by Malawi, then Ethiopia. In Group C, Gabon beat Burkina Faso 2-0 as Lesotho and Angola drew 0-0. Gabon topped the group with 7 points. They are followed by Burkina Faso, Lesotho, then Angola. In Group D, Sierra Leone and Cameroon drew 0-0 as Ivory Coast edged the Democratic Republic of Congo 2-1. Cameroon topped the group with 7 points. They are followed by Ivory Coast, the Democratic Republic of Congo, then Sierra Leone. In Group E, Ghana and Guinea drew 1-1 as Togo pipped Uganda 1-0. Ghana lead the group with 5 points. Uganda is second, followed by Guinea and Togo. Elsewhere, Mozambique outplayed Cape Verde Islands 2-0 as Zambia and Niger drew 1-1 in Group F. Despite their loss, Cape Verde Islands still lead the group with 6 points. Mozambique is second ahead of Zambia, then Niger. In Group G, Senegal and Tunisia drew 0-0 as Egypt beat Botswana 2-0. Although Senegal and Tunisia tie on 7 points, Senegal lead the group on account of a better goal difference. Egypt is third ahead of Botswana. Finally, hosts Tanzania thrashed Benin 4-1 in a friendly played in Dar es Salaam. Today, Monday, Morocco host Kenya in Marrakesh. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Alice Namil for this Monday morning comes from Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria. He says, dear VOA, I'd like to welcome with utmost caution the declaration by President Goodluck Ebele Jonathan of an Ebola-free Nigeria. But I think that until it is otherwise proved in the long run, Nigerians and their global folks should hold their breath over President Jonathan's chest beating. I also subscribe to the school of thought that the Nigerian government should contribute its quota to the fight against the outbreak of Ebola. We thank you, Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's it for this Monday, October 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a productive week.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta appears before the International Criminal Court on charges of crime against humanity for allegedly helping to organize Kenya's post-election violence in 2007 and 2008. Mr. Kenyatta is the first sitting leader to appear at the Hague Tribunal. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.